بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، وصلى الله وسلم وبارك على عبده ورسوله الأمين نبينا محمد وعلى آله وصحبه ومن اهتدى بهديه واستنى بسنته إلى يوم الدين. أما بعد، السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته.
وعليكم السلام ورحمة الله وبركاته.
We move on to a new chapter in our series on عمدة الأحكام. This chapter deals with الجهاد. And this topic, the minute people hear al-jihad, they're going to turn off the television sets. And those who are sitting, they probably mask themselves, not being associated with this beautiful and noble ritual, al-jihad. It is part of our deen. It is part of our Islam. Yet there are a lot of controversial issues surrounding this beautiful ritual and a lot of misconceptions. Therefore, you cannot judge something until you study it, until you take it from the sources. And without that, you would be taking the wrong idea and having the wrong conclusions. So what is jihad? Jihad, to begin with, is to struggle. And it is not only limited to killing and fighting. We have jihad of shaitan. We have jihad of our own selves. We have the jihad against the hypocrites. We have the jihad against the sinners, Muslims, but the sinners. And we have the jihad against the disbelievers. So there are five types of jihad, and each one has its weapons and arms and different types of capabilities. So we do jihad with the soul by struggling, by forcing ourselves to worship Allah and to stay away from haram. This is the type of jihad that we need. We have to learn about Islam so that we make jihad against the doubts that come to us. Without having knowledge, shaitan plays with us like a football. Therefore, we need knowledge to be able to refute and deflect his doubts and his bad thoughts. We need jihad with the hypocrites who claim to be Muslims and they're not. And they're undermining Islam from beneath. So how to make jihad with them? With force? No. With knowledge. So when they say something, we say Quran and Sunnah say against that. And this is the type of weaponry to be used with the hypocrites and so on. Now, what we care about is jihad against the disbelievers. Is Islam considered to be a violent religion? No. And we can prove that, but we need a lot of more lectures about that. What do you say about the accusation that Islam was spread by the sword? Again, this is false. If you look at the history of Islam, you will find that force was not used all the time, but it was used. And there has to be force used in most of the things that we do. So this is not our topic. Our topic is, what is the jihad that is mentioned in the Quran? There are two types of jihad, offensive and defensive. The defensive side, we will talk, inshallah, throughout these hadiths we're going through. The offensive side, this can only be applied when the Muslim country or the Muslim nation, it has its sovereignty, its power, its army, and they're practicing. A Muslim country that is not practicing cannot make jihad for the cause of Allah. Because what is the intention of jihad? What is the cause and the soul of jihad? It is to invite people to Islam. But there is no compulsion in deen, right? There is no compulsion in religion. So why are you attacking us? We are not attacking you. We are simply there to deliver the message of Islam. Okay, you delivered the message of Islam. Bye-bye. No, the land is not yours. The land is Allah's. So, in this case, either accept Islam, we'll leave you alone. If you don't want to accept Islam, no problem. Pay the jizya, the taxation. We will defend you. We will take care of you. But this money has to be paid because you're living on Allah's land. This taxation for us to guard you and protect you against any assault. Yet at the same time, and it's a minimal fee. Yet at the same time, this is considered to be an Islamic territory. If you refuse, then we will fight you. One of the three. But this, is it applicable now? The Muslim countries themselves need to have some kind of liberation because the people are not worshipping Allah Azza wa Jal. They're not applying the Quran and Sunnah in their lives, in their rulings, in their economy, in their politics. They're so, so far away to the extent that they're humiliated as Muslim nations or Muslim countries. So this is the offensive jihad. The defensive jihad is when the enemy attacks you. What to do? Now, in order not to be classified as a terrorist to them, the right thing to do is just sit there, watch them invade your country, killing your men, raping your women, and taking your children as captive. Otherwise, if you defend yourself, if you defend your honor, then you're considered to be a terrorist. And this is the colonial powers. Those who invaded the Muslim countries and invaded 50 or 70 or 100 years ago, this is their mentality, that the Muslims are there only to serve us. That is why two soldiers were talking over lunch, and they were saying that these Africans, when they invaded them, these Africans are barbaric. And the other man says, yes, I agree. Why? He said, imagine I was executing this African man because he did a crime, and this savage, barbaric person bit my hand. This is why he's barbaric. You're killing him. And you want him to give you a kiss and say, thank you for killing me, Your Highness? What do you expect him to do? So, no, no, he's barbaric. He bit my hand. So this is the mentality of colonial powers that only take the fruit and the goodness of the land and leave the people to die or to perish. This is not their problem. Defensive jihad is something that is mandatory upon the country or the city that is being invaded. And jihad is mandatory in four cases, as the scholars say. But first of all, what is the ruling on jihad? Is it mandatory, meaning on every individual? Or is it fard kifaya, communal obligation, that if some do it, then the rest are exempted? The most authentic opinion is that it is communal obligation, fard kifaya. It is not mandatory upon every single individual, except in four cases. What are these four cases? One, when the armies meet and you're among them. So if you are with the Muslim army and the enemy army comes and approaches, it is mandatory upon you to fight. You cannot say, oops, I have to go. I have an important appointment. The dentist. I have a 1-month-old appointment with the dentist. No, you must fight. And you cannot run away because one of the seven major sins in Islam is to run away when the armies meet. This is extremely major and dangerous sin in Islam. Unless you are using war tactics. So I cannot run away. Yes, but if I am running away so that he would follow me and all of a sudden I would face him and kill him, this is halal. Or if I'm running away so that I can join another army so that we become more stronger to attack, again, this is halal. But if you're running away because I have nothing to do here, man, I'm going, I'm gone. No, this is a major sin. So number one, it's mandatory to fight when? When the two armies meet. Number two, it is mandatory for you to fight when the enemy enters your city or town or invades your country. It becomes mandatory to fight. You cannot run away. What about the percentage? If there are so many of them. Well, in part one, when the armies are meeting, and this is not defensive, this is offensive jihad. when the armies are meeting, if they are more than double the size of our army, we have the permission not to fight, not to engage. In the beginning of Islam, as mentioned in Surah Al-Anfal, chapter 8, at the very end. In the beginning, it was mandatory upon every Muslim to fight 10 times as big. So a warrior, if faced with 10, he has to fight them. If faced by 11, he has an excuse to leave or run away. And this was the case. They used to fight, but then it was hard on them. So Allah abrogated it because He saw the weakness, subhanahu wa ta'ala, He knew the weakness and wanted to have mercy on them and made it 1-2-2. Meaning if there's a warrior and two enemy fighters, he has to fight them till the death. If there are more, he has an excuse. But this doesn't mean that he does not or he cannot stand in the face of more than two. This means that he has the excuse to go, but if he wants to fight 10, he can fight 10. And this is what happened with the Muslims in, for example, Badr, 300 plus, and the Mushrik were 1,000 plus. And in Uhud as well, the ratio was very little. In Mu'tah, there were 3,000 of them and 200,000 of the Byzantines and the Romans. There's much, much difference. So they had the excuse not to fight, but they still fought, and they are rewarded for doing this. We have a short break. Stay tuned, and inshallah, we'll be right back.